The Salmon of Doubt by Douglas Adams, read by Stephen Mangan, with a foreword read by Stephen Fry and the epilogue read by Richard Dawkins. For Polly. Editor's note. I first met Douglas Adams in 1990. Newly appointed his editor at Harmony Books, I'd flown to London in search of Douglas's long overdue fifth Hitchhiker novel, Mostly Harmless. No sooner was I buzzed in the door to the Adams residence in Islington than a large, ebullient man bounded down the long staircase, greeted me warmly, and thrust a handful of pages at me. "See what you think of these," he said over his shoulder as he bounded back up the stairs. An hour later he was back, new pages in hand, eager to hear my opinion of the first batch. And so the afternoon passed, quiet stretches of reading, alternating with more bounding, more conversation, and fresh pages. This, it turned out, was Douglas's favourite way of working. In September 2001, 4 months after Douglas's tragic, unexpected death, I received a phone call from his agent, Ed Victor. A good friend had preserved the contents of Douglas's many beloved Macintosh computers. Would I be interested in combing through the files to see if they contained the makings of a book? A few days later, a package arrived, and curiosity whetted, I tore it open. My first thought was that Douglas's friend, Chris Ogle, had undertaken a Herculean task, which, as it turned out, he had. The CD-ROM onto which Douglas's writing had been collected contained 2,579 items, ranging from huge files that stored the complete text of Douglas's books to letters on behalf of Save the Rhino, a favourite charity. Here too were fascinating glimpses into dozens of half-brewed ideas for books, films and television programmes, sometimes as brief as a sentence or two, others running to half a dozen pages. Alongside these were drafts of speeches, pieces Douglas had written for his website, introductions to various books and events, and musings on subjects near to Douglas's heart: music, technology, science, endangered species, travel, and single malt whiskey, to name just a few. Finally, I found dozens of versions of the new novel Douglas had been wrestling with for the better part of the past decade. Sorting these out to arrive at the work in progress you'll find in the third section of this book would prove my greatest challenge, although that makes it sound difficult. It was not. As quickly as questions arose, they seemed to answer themselves. Conceived as a third Dirk Gently novel, Douglas's novel in progress began life as A Spoon Too Short and was described as such in his files until August 1993. From this point forward, folders refer to the novel as The Salmon of Doubt and fall into three categories. From oldest to most recent, they are The Old Salmon, The Salmon of Doubt, and LA/Rhino/Ranting Manor. Reading through these various versions, I decided that for the purposes of this book, Douglas would be best served if I stitched together the strongest material, regardless of when it was written, much as I might have proposed doing were he still alive. So, from The Old Salmon, I reinstated what is now the first chapter on Daveland. The following six chapters come intact from the second and longest continuous version, The Salmon of Doubt. Then, with an eye to keeping the storyline clear, I dropped in two of his three most recent chapters from LA/Rhino/Ranting Manor, which became chapters 8 and 9. For chapter 10, I went back to the last chapter from The Salmon of Doubt, then concluded with the final chapter from Douglas's most recent work from LA/Rhino/Ranting Manor. To give the reader a sense of what Douglas planned for the rest of the novel, I preceded all this with a fax from Douglas to his London editor, Sue Freestone, who worked closely with Douglas on his books from the very first. Inspired by reading these Adams treasures on the CD-ROM, I enlisted the invaluable aid of Douglas's personal assistant, Sophie Astin, to cast the net wider. Were there other jewels we might include in a book tribute to Douglas's life? As it turned out, during fallow periods between books or multimedia mega-projects, Douglas had written articles for newspapers and magazines. These, together with the text on the CD-ROM, provided the magnificent pool of writings that gave life to this book. The next task was selection, which involved not the slightest shred of objectivity. Sophie Astin, Ed Victor, and Douglas's wife,